from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about a new show of Douglas David's paintings.
I'll chat with the architect working on the new Cummins building and the 21C Museum Hotel.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Sister Cities Fest. Plus, I'll find out what's going on at the Indianapolis Arts Center this fall. And there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Speedway Center for the Arts is opening a new gallery space, and their first show will feature painter Douglas David's work. Travis DiNicola spoke with David as well as artist Amy Carroll about the new gallery and their work.
Amy, Douglas, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. It's fun. Always fun to see you.
Oh, always a pleasure to see you too, Douglas. Always enjoy your art and having a chance to catch up with you. And I'm so glad to hear that you've got this new solo show at the Speedway Center for the Arts. That's what I want to first start talking about is what is this new gallery? Amy, you're the president of the Speedway
Arts Advisory Council.
Arts Advisory Council,
yes.
Okay.
And then also the director of the Art Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collaborative group of artists, and we get together. It's not a co-op because we're run strictly by the town and by the Arts Advisory Council and Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we all get together and we hang art and we do art of all kinds. It's not just about flat art on the walls or anything like that. It's more than that. But right now, we're excited because Douglas David has really helped us emerge on the art scene with his exhibits. It's really going to become a great space for professional artists to come and do a solo show in the front portion of our gallery.
Okay. Now, this group's been around for a while, right?
We've had the Art Center for about 3 years.
Okay. On Main Street there in Speedway?
On Main Street, but we just recently moved to our permanent location.
Okay.
Our redevelopment supplies our building for us, and they just recently bought us the building that we will stay at. We used to be at the Rosner Building on the corner, and now they bought us this building, and we're staying there, and they fixed it up for us.
And that building is also on Main Street?
It was, yeah. We just moved down a couple blocks.
Okay, so still on Main Street.
Right, we're kind of across from the Sarah Fisher Hartman Building and all the main activity
going on.
And
Leno's and all that down
there.
Exactly. And Delara. Sure, okay.
Exactly.
Excellent, excellent. So, but You've had shows before, but this is kind of new because it really is a space devoted to being a gallery, right?
Absolutely. Well, it's been a gallery before, but the mm-hmm. difference is that we are featuring one artist at a time. We've got, mm-hmm. like I said, Douglas David. It's a huge honor to have him. He's got to be, like, what, one of the top five artists in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. You're very kind.
I twisted his arm and said, would you come and do this, please, please, please? And I think there might have been tears or begging of
something.
Kind.
Yes, there was. There was.
And he said, well, I will. And he whipped us into shape and gave us some great ideas about, like, making it an educational program as well with the Art Center. We want to look at it as not only will we have one artist that's, you know, doing art full time, featured mm-hmm. in the gallery in the front area, but behind that, we have a space for workshops and education programs. And we also look at it as a way to educate the emerging professional artists.
Mm-hmm.
So we have those other artists that come in and volunteer to keep it open and hang their artwork in the back through a space. And that way, because their interaction with Douglas, they'll get to learn how to, you know, bump up their game a little bit.
Awesome. That's great. Douglas, how do you get connected with the Speedway Arts Center?
You know, I've known Amy off through the years, and she kept saying, when are you going to have a show?
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I ran out, and actually she was dropping some entries off for me for another entry, and I said, you know, let's look at this. And
yeah.
So
now, you don't live in Speedway, though, right?
No, I'm up near Broad Ripple.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. But obviously, great space over there and great neighborhood and great part of town and great history as well.
Oh, it's really amazing what's happening on Main Street. And this, what was fun when I saw this space was, you know, they already had the members were very active in what they're doing and showing their mm-hmm. work and kind of showing, you know, series of works from one certain member. But with, you know, my part of it was kind of carving out or creating a space kind of on the front end or on the over, like an umbrella, so mm-hmm. to speak, so that so that the members will be able to interact with me and see that, you know, how we're planning the show, how we're hanging the show. And then I'll be out there off and on during the 6 weeks. And it kind of sets the, what would you say?
The standard. It certainly, you know, sets the bar and the standard for what's to come.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It kind of outlines it for future shows. So they've got some really great things lined up after me. I think there's a holiday boutique, which will be members and some guest artists. And then after that, there's things. They're going to try to mix it. So there's some photography, some sculpture, some painting, drawing, you know, good things in the future.
Excellent. Now, Douglas, most people know your work through what you do in terms of beautiful impressionist landscapes, as well as still lifes with flowers, and certainly a wide variety of other things as well. But a lot of people see you at fairs and festivals and things like that. So this show is titled Fall's Approach, right?
Right.
So it's paintings of fall, early winter. Tell me a bit more about the work you've created for the show.
We've been thinking a lot about it. You know, when Amy had asked me to be in this space, and we had to come up with a theme, because I really love to theme my shows, and I think that's an important thing as an artist works on a new body of work. And fall is tough, because sometimes, you know, depending on the rain and the temperature and the way the color turns, sometimes you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's long, and sometimes it's brown. You know, so what I really have been thinking a lot about as I paint, and I'm finishing these. I was up last night to almost 2 finishing some things. And I was like, you know, the thing is, I first off try to grab the atmosphere and create the atmosphere in the pieces and the distance. But, you know, that color, each piece is a little different in how I'm interpreting it, and the oranges, the yellows. You know, I don't use a lot of those normally in my palette.
You use lots of blues and greens and yellows and such. I mean, I think of a lot of your landscapes as being spring and summer.
Right. I paint mostly in spring, I think. But what was fun about this show is to be able to kind of grow a bit and push myself, because I don't do a lot of fall.
Yeah.
And then we kind of took it into winter, because it seems like, you know, that's the next logical, and it kind of sets the stage for what they're going to do then, you know, with the holiday. And so it's kind of fun.
And let me just say, I saw a sneak peek picture of the main painting he busted out, and it is breathtaking.
Oh,
it is amazing. I just saw a little text of it, and I was like, oh my gosh, because you can't do better pairing. You got Douglas David and you got Fall Indiana art scene. So, you know, how much better can it get than that?
You're very kind. You're very kind. No, I've had fun planning this, and it's been fun working with Amy and her group, because what we're doing is we're kind of creating something that they haven't yet had, and that is a showcase where, you know, I'm always looking for new places to show, and I'm excited about this, because, you know, in the metro, you know, this is close, really close to downtown. I think we'll get a lot of urban. They have a great following in there, you know, on the west side and in Speedway, surrounding Speedway. But to create this new space, I think it'll be really a pretty dynamite program.
That's very cool. Very, very cool.
The other thing that's so appealing about Speedway right now is just the energy and the synergy that's going on, just, you know, in general there. And then to have something like this happen.
Well, and this weekend, Jazz Fest is having a show on Friday night out in front of Lino's and Delara.
In fact, I think I'm going to demo. I think I'm going to go over on Jazz Night and take my easel and in my space, quote unquote, and maybe
Depends on the weather, too.
Sure.
You might be out on the sidewalk right in front of the art center.
If everything's
like
not finished, maybe I'll be working on the show. How do you know? You know?
So I want to ask you a little bit more about the paintings that you did. So for fall, when obviously we're just entering fall now, and I know that a lot of the time, I mean, you work outside quite a lot.
I try to do a lot of plein air, but on this particular case, you know, I had to pull some reference from past years. And I called this, you know, actually when I wrote it up, I said a collection of oil paintings that embrace the approach of fall and winter. That whole idea of the essence of fall, you know, the beginning. So some of mine will have green foregrounds, but the leaves are starting to turn. Some of them are a little farther along where the leaves are almost gone. You know, there's just a little bit left. So, you know, it's kind of more of a conceptual approach than to go out and actually document. You know, I couldn't get 25 paintings this fall when fall isn't here yet.
Sure, right. You know? That's what I was thinking. Like, so, you know, did you start last year and didn't sound like you were, you know, even were thinking about it yet at that
point?
No,
we pulled this together this spring. We've talked about it for probably 6 months. And But, you know, I kind of...
Did you travel forward in time to look at the fall colors?
I feel like we just started working on it last week. It's been a really hard week.
It really does. I've painted fall every year, but not a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not a lot. So this has been good.
You seem very excited about it.
Yeah, it kind of pushes me to a new... to some new work. And then I'm going to put a couple florals in. I actually texted Amy last night or night before, and I said, you know, I need a couple florals to break it up. I think maybe some sunflowers, because they still seem kind of fall-like. And I don't really go out and paint pumpkins right now. I'm not quite there. I think they could be neat to paint them, but, you know, when it maybe I'll do some of that in season.
Yeah, so. Sure. Excellent. Well, Amy, this sounds like it's just going to be a delightful show and a great way to kick off the new space and sort of a real new approach, it sounds like, for the center.
I don't know if it's a new approach or if we're just kind of looking at the traditional art in Indiana and being able to highlight. There's not really a great avenue for one artist to come and set up a solo exhibit too much anymore, especially in Indianapolis.
It's getting harder in this market to find a really great spot to show. And, you know, without a lot of red tape and without a lot of applications. And, you know, they're so new, and it's still, I kept saying, grassroots. There's a lot of opportunity out there.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. Very good. So you're working on what's next?
Holiday Boutique will be, you know, will feature some of our member artists that are there all the time, as well as some that will invite some future exhibitors in the space to come and bring a few paintings. Even Douglas said he'd put on a few of that. Well, more of a boutique kind of feel in the front area. And then after that, we're looking to have a really strong black and white artist come and do a short exhibit in the winter.
Photography. She's thinking photography. When we were kind of brainstorming concept, you know, January with all the black and white, and we said, boy, that'd be a natural for a really great black and white artist, a black and white photography artist.
So, we're looking to have that. I think that'll be fantastic. And then in the spring, we are working on, because we're Speedway, we always have to come back to that art of racing.
Well, of course.
And we're working together with the community to come up with the programs from the last 100 years of the race. The covers of the programs are so artistic in nature. And so we'd like to do a display of those for the spring into May, early June.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think
very
so.
Good. Very good. Well, thank you both so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Thank you.
Great to hear what's going on in Speedway, Amy, and always great to catch up with you, Douglas.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artists Amy Carroll and Douglas David. David's solo show, Fall's Approach, opens on Saturday, October 3rd at the Speedway Center for the Arts on Main Street in Speedway. The opening reception is from 5 to 9 p.m., and then the show will be up through November 22nd. More information at douglasdavid.com, douglasdavid.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
High-profile architect Deborah Burke is coming to Indianapolis to give a free talk next week, and Sharon Gamble thinks you might want to attend. Ms. Burke and her firm are designing the new Cummins Building in downtown Indianapolis, as well as the new 21C Museum Hotel that will incorporate our old City Hall. Sharon invited Deborah Burke to tell us how she decides what a building should look like, why where you work matters, and why she enjoys designing everyday environments.
So I understand in the course of three decades or so you've had your firm, you have been refining your philosophy, and one of your goals is to produce or work from a position of knowing simplicity. What is that?
I would describe knowing simplicity, in quotations, knowing simplicity as an informed sense of how little you can do with and have everything still look and feel right. So it's not total denial. It's not being monk-like. It's not self-important. It's not a martyrdom. It's much more of a kind of beautiful, clear, minimal simplicity that's based on a kind of self-knowledge.
I love that. You've spent a lot of your and your firm's time designing for public spaces, for public life. Is there some particular mindset you get into or a gear that you switch to say, okay, this is not residential, this is a building that many thousands of people would be pouring in and out of?
Well, of course, public buildings are very different than doing houses, but there are certain commonalities, which is you think of the user in all the varieties of userness. So a city might commission a building, but the users are the citizens, and a family might commission a house, but the users, in addition to the parents, might be the children, the relatives, the friends,
the pets,
the responsibility of the building to the neighborhood, and things like that.
Yeah.
So that said, then, thinking about public buildings, I think a lot about who goes in and out of them each day over the course of the year, and what is that experience like?
Hmm. So take us behind the scenes. Most of our listeners are well-educated but not in your field, and maybe they don't know, and I admit I don't know, how this process works. So you know you're going to bid on designing, say, the Cummins headquarters. How do you figure out what the site is like? What kind of time do you spend just looking at the site and analyzing what's around it? And how do you decide to move forward to create that design?
Well, design for me, and I think for most architects, is a reiterative process that gets denser and richer as you further go into the various scales of a building. But first and foremost, you visit the site, the place. And when we were first thinking about the Cummins building, we went to Indianapolis, a city I already knew and am very, very fond of, and walked not just the block, which of course was parking lots at the time, but up and down the neighboring streets, had lunch in the market building, which is Kitty Croner, sat in the park and in front of the civic building, and wanted to become part of that place and absorb all of its atmosphere and character, positive and maybe not so positive, and understand what it was like, so that our first thoughts about where the building should go on the site, how it should respond to sun and light and the current flow of people and ideally the future enhanced flow of people, would be the first things that we thought about. We actually go with sketchbooks and cameras to jot down what we're thinking and seeing, and then come back to our desks and draw and build models in all various media, both old-fashioned and new.
And I want to go back to the concept of light, because I haven't seen the building yet because it's not complete yet, but the sketches, the renderings I've seen make it look like this fabulous jewel box that's just absorbing and splaying the light back out in a part of our city that doesn't have a lot of light going on to start with.
Well, I think we were thinking about a number of things at the same time. You know, what is the responsibility of the building to the city, the greater city, the citizens of the city? And then what is the experience of the Cummins employee or Cummins guest or visitor inside the building? You know, and people often groan when you talk about a workplace. In fact, I think work is a wonderful thing when it's fulfilling and meaningful. And some of that has to do with not just your job description, but the quality of the space you're in when you're doing your work. So we paid a lot of attention to thinking from the inside of the building out of what it would be like to be at your desk. And item one for me was daylight. I want people to be able to work in natural light whenever possible. I think it's healthy and it feels good and it connects you to the weather and what's going on outside. So we call the facade of the building calibrated. It's designed to let in a lot of light, but simultaneously reduce the worst of solar gain. So it's a responsible building environmentally. But it really was all about, let's get light inside. Let's get natural light inside, because that's the best possible way to work.
And it could have been just a big rectangular box, but you've put this sassy bend in it. Is that functional or for beauty?
Well, the slight angles on the facade of the building are, in fact, part of the calibration. They respond to the movement of the sun over not just the course of the day, but over the course of the year. And so those slight angles are, in fact, about a calibrated access to daylight and then a calibrated control of solar gain. They do happen to look really great, and I have to say, I'm excited about them. I don't want to say it was designed by a machine that went, oh, here's what sun does. We were balancing an aesthetic with an idea about how it should perform.
So, and that's so perfect for a company that engineers things, too. So tell us about the role, not just in the Cummins building, but in general, maybe, of what the function of the company you're designing for. How does that inform your design, or does it?
Well, design is always informed by, by the client, by the user. I think that's one of the things that distinguishes architecture from sculpture, and that is not a slight to either of those fields. It's just a descriptive one, which is we hear what our clients want and include it in an aesthetic and performative and responsible way to accommodate all of their needs. So for Cummins, it was about a workplace and an identity for the distribution branch of the business. Mm-hmm. For other corporate clients, it again has to do with identity, like the bank we did down in Columbus, Indiana, a number of years ago. And for public clients, it like the library we did down in Hope, Indiana, quite a number of years ago, or the current cultural center we're doing in New York City, it's about welcoming the public. So a lot of this is about listening to what the user or the owner says the building needs to do, and then letting those needs inform our design thinking.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump the gun a little bit. I know it's a little premature to ask you about the 21C Museum Hotel here, but I want to know because it's not that far away from the Cummins headquarters, but it's
just two blocks.
It's such a different project, and I have another job working in historic preservation, and I happen to agree with you. I read somewhere that you said the term adaptive reuse kind of sucks the life out of the idea, but explain what adaptive reuse is and kind of how that fits into Old City Hall and the 21C Museum Hotel.
So adaptive reuse is a wonderful idea that just has an unfortunately clumsy and life-sucking name to it. It is the taking of an old building that was built for one purpose and adapting it, hence the adaptive reuse, for another purpose. So it could be, as the cultural center I just referred to we're doing here in New York City, an old 1890s New York City public school that we are turning into a community cultural center. It has a theater group, a painting group, a health clinic, a walk-in gallery. So old public school, new public art spaces. Or in Indianapolis, the old city hall becoming public gathering spaces, restaurants, tenant spaces, lobby for a 21C Museum Hotel. And as you may know, the 21C Museum Hotels, with the exception of the one in Bentonville, Arkansas, are all adaptive reuse projects where 21C ownership, to their absolute credit, and they're wonderful people with a great aesthetic and a great mission, find old buildings and in collaboration with locals transform them into these great new hotels and restaurants.
And your firm worked on the one in Durham, right?
That is right. We have worked with the 21C folks who are based in Louisville on all of the 21C hotels.
Yeah.
There are four that are currently open and a few more that are under construction right now. So there's Durham is open, Cincinnati is open, Louisville is open, and Bentonville is open. Lexington is under construction, and Oklahoma City is under construction.
So you've gotten to play with the building blocks of a really wide range of reused buildings.
That's exactly right. So Lexington, the 21C, is a former McKim, Mead & White bank building, and the 21C in Oklahoma City is a former Ford assembly plant. So those couldn't be more different.
I love it. I read that you once described being an architect as fabulously fulfilling. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I guess because I was born to be an architect, I guess. And so I find that isn't to say that every day is absolutely perfect in every way.
What? But the work, oh, no, don't tell us that.
The work itself is satisfying for me. And I think, you know, if you're a composer or a writer or maybe, you know, almost any job, if it's meaningful to you and it feels like it brings meaning and substance and some kind of quality of life to other people's lives, is fulfilling. But for me, it's about envisioning an object and envisioning space inside that object or as part of that object and then bringing them to reality. I just love it. It feels good.
It's wonderful that you found the right place in the world. That's a great blessing. And we look forward to seeing you here back in Indianapolis in a few days and watching your new projects come to life.
Well, thank you very much for that. As I said earlier, I really enjoy Indiana and Indianapolis. I've gotten to know it pretty well. We love the folks at Ratio and at Wilhelm Construction. We're having a great time with them and a great time having reasons to come to Indianapolis, which is such a cool city.
Boy, your mouth to God's ear. People who live in Indianapolis, I grew up in L.A., but I've lived here a long time, and we have the worst inferiority complex, so it's great to have somebody say that to us, you know?
Yeah, I've watched Indianapolis really come alive over the many years that I have known it, and I think, you know, its urban plan, the rise of new restaurants, the soon arrival of a 21C, the new Cummins, the new downtown housing, what's not to like? The Green Market, even? It's all really great.
Fantastic. Deborah Burke, thank you so much for being with us on The Art of the Matter. Safe travels, and we'll see you in a few days.
Looking forward to it.
Sharon Gamble with architect Deborah Burke. She's coming to town next Wednesday evening, September 23rd, to give a free talk called An Evening with Deborah Burke, Old New Work. The talk is at 5:30 at the Indiana War Memorial at 431 North Meridian Street. The event is free, but an RSVP is requested. You can go to eventbrite.com and search for Deborah Burke. Her name is spelled B-E-R-K-E. Again, Deborah Burke, B-E-R-K-E. And if you find that, then you can reserve your ticket. And you can also get more information at aiaindiana.org. Again, aiaindiana.org.
The annual Indianapolis Sister Cities Fest brings together food, music, and more from Indy's 8 sister cities with this free event on Georgia Street. It's coming up on Saturday, September 19th. Travis DiNicola spoke with Una Hartzell-Baird about the event.
Una, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me, Travis.
So, Sister Cities Festival, here we are again. It's a great event. How many years has this been going on now?
This is the fourth year that the fest has been in town. However, okay. Our very first sister city relationship was mm-hmm. in 1978 with Taipei, Taiwan.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. And Indianapolis has a number of sister cities. I mean, how many are we up to right now?
We do. We are up to 8 sister cities
right now. Okay. I think maybe the last time that we were talking about the Sister City Festival, we had 7 or something. But who are the sister cities right now that we have?
So the sister cities we currently have are Taipei, Taiwan, mm-hmm. Cologne, Germany, Monza, Italy, Peron, Slovenia, Hangzhou, China, Campinas, Brazil, Northamptonshire County, UK, and Hyderabad, India, which was our most recent sister city in 2010.
Very cool. Okay. So a recent addition there, somewhat. So the festival itself is a great way to celebrate the cultures of those cities, of those countries. Great event. It's always a lot of fun. Before we talk about the event itself, though, the sister cities, how does that function in terms of, besides the festival, what's sort of the other purpose of them, or how does that play out throughout the year?
So sister city relationships are more informal mm-hmm. In structure as opposed to international relations, the way we see it with the UN and
sure.
the way countries interact. So they're typically city, county, or state relationships mm-hmm. that are created to be more broad-based and long-term partnerships between two communities and two countries rather than countries themselves.
Okay.
So typically we look at things like similarity in terms of arts and culture or sports. Mm-hmm. So with Monza, Italy, racing is the thing that we have in common with them. Mm-hmm. And those relationships are typically created by the highest level of office. So, for instance, our mayor signs off on those sister city relationships for Indianapolis. And in smaller cities, they've actually started using technology. So now instead of having that person come in person and take on that extra expense, they are using Skype to do those signing, the formal signatures for
makes
the relationships.
Yes. Now, are there, do physical trips happen between the two cities, or are there exchanges, or what? How does that occur?
Yes. So it depends on what the sister city relationship is like
and
who it's with.
Sure, each one's a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But there are trips, and often sister cities will host delegations coming in from their other sister cities around the world. And it can be a great opportunity for community members to travel internationally if they haven't been, but also for people like mayors and governors to expand those international relationships as well.
Very cool. And so the festival, again, is a great celebration of all these sister cities and culture and food, art, music, all sorts of things.
Yes.
When is it taking place this year?
So this year, the fest is on September 19th, which is a Saturday. It is from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Georgia Street again. So we are the largest
cultural
fest.
That's where it's been the past couple years, yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's been a great location for us, so we continue to host it there.
It works out very well. Yeah, and it's a free event, right?
It is. It's 100% free, family-friendly. Mm-hmm. There's a kids' zone this year, and we'll have Animalia featured in the kids' zone, as well as a world sports zone. And what's different this year is that the Mayor's International Futsal Tournament is happening the same weekend. So you sort of have a two-for-one event happening there.
The Mayor's International
Futsal Tournament. So not quite soccer. It's played with a different ball and on a hard court.
Okay.
And so the Mayor's office is recruiting 32 different countries from the Indianapolis community. So there will be people who have some type of tie to the various countries. So my dad, for example, we're from Bosnia, and he's putting together a team from Bosnia as well for the event.
Nice. So, now, where's that taking place?
That'll be at the Panem Plaza.
Okay. Cool. Which is right there.
Just
off
walking
of Georgia
distance
Street.
From the fest.
Perfect. So what's the lineup this year in terms of entertainment throughout the day?
So we have some fantastic things happening. Of course, we're going to kick everything off with the national anthem at noon. We will have some performers from India featured right after that. We have Chinese performers, instrumental and dance. The mayor will do a greeting as well at the fest. We have folks from the Burmese Ching community doing a dance as well. We have the we actually have a fashion show this year, which is new. So an international fashion show. And Bembe is one of the bands that we'll be featuring in our international lineup as well.
Nice, nice. And so that'll be going on throughout the day. And and then there'll be lots of sort of like booths with information as well as food and shopping and stuff like that, right?
Perfect. Exactly. So we will have a variety of merchants and exhibitors there. There will be also several different food trucks that will be available, as well as other restaurants. So Dick's Last Resort was kind enough to come in with the American fare for us this year.
Excellent. Okay.
And we actually have a new beer sponsor this year, Redemption Ale Works, and they're brewing a couple of Sister Cities beers, especially for this event. So
very fun.
I don't know how many other Sister Cities fests can say they have beer made especially for them.
That's a very cool thing to add on this year.
Absolutely.
Nice. So in the past, I mean, you get pretty great crowds for this, right? I mean, it's been a very popular event.
Yes. Yes. Typically somewhere around 4,000 people come and visit the Sister Cities Fest, learn more about the Sister Cities program. It's a great way for families, particularly homeschooling families, to come and interact with different cultures, learn more about the Sister Cities, and just have a great time for free.
Very cool. And again, for free and very, very family friendly. Lots of great things for kids to do throughout the day. And again, on Georgia Street, taking place on the 19th and from noon till 5, right?
Yes, from noon till 5.
And so what are you looking forward to the most? I know it's hard to pick.
No, you know, it's actually a really clear-cut winner for me, the food.
The food?
The food, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We get to try different food trucks from around the city and different restaurants from downtown, and it is my cheat day, so I get to eat anything and everything in sight.
Nice.
So there's nothing better than that.
That sounds excellent. That sounds very good. have you been involved with this from the beginning? Is that right? Or
I have been involved for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So last year, I came on as the marketing chair. Mm-hmm. Jane Gelhausen, who is the director of the Mayor's Office of International and Cultural Affairs, heads up the fest. Mm-hmm. And her marketing chair the year before decided that it was time to move on and do something else. So I stepped in.
So you've been helping out?
Mm-hmm. I have been. And this year, I'm actually co-chairing the fest with Jane, and we have a marketing team. So
nice.
Very exciting. Brand new website, IndieSisterCitiesFest.com. So there have been a lot of changes and improvements, and it just continues to get even better.
Excellent. Una, thanks so much for coming on Art of the Matter today. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
I would be remiss if I didn't thank some of our fantastic sponsors for making it a free event, including Eli Lilly and Company, Indy 11, Citizens Energy Group, PNC Bank, and of course my alma mater, IUPUI.
Nice. Very good. Well, it's a great event, great day in downtown Indianapolis. Looking forward to it very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Una Hartzell-Baird from the Sister Cities Fest. The free festival takes place from noon to 5 p.m. this Saturday. That's this Saturday, September 19th on Georgia Street in downtown Indy. More information is available at IndySisterCitiesFest.com. IndySisterCitiesFest.com. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
We have such a short time for our calendar today. We're not going to be clever. We're just going to tell you about a couple things going on our calendar we call What Do We Do?
That's right. There's so much going on right now. One thing that's going on is people are already preparing for Spirit in Place, and I know that festival is not until November, but there's a really cool exhibit called Wrestling with the Infinite that is going to be taking place at the Arts Garden starting on Saturday, November 7th, and each afternoon it's going to feature all sorts of different visual arts and music and poetry and performance inspired by the Genesis story of Jacob's dreams, and it's going to have lots of audience and visitor participation. But right now, what's going on is that three poets who are working on the project, Wendy Virgos, Terry Offner, and J.L. Cato, are collecting lines for a dream poem that will be written by you, and they're doing this through the end of the month. And so you can submit lines of a full poem or parts of a poem or whatever you want. If you go onto Facebook and you search for, yes, searching for Wrestling with the Infinite, then you can find out how to submit your poems.
Gosh, I have a couple things not quite as interactive. The first is from the creative team that brought you 465 Sex Drive a couple years ago. Enter Love is that new musical you heard about on The Art of the Matter. It's set in an international airport, and it features people at all stages of love. Some tears, some happy endings, and lots to think about. That's on stage at Theater on the Square right now through September 27th. Also, opening on the 24th, One Man, Two Governors by Richard Bean at the Phoenix Theater. Crazy, fast-paced, topsy-turvy farce of love triangles and mistaken identities.
It's supposed to be very fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of love, poet Dan Carpenter and writer will be featured with the Poets Laureate of Lawrence at Lawrence Arts Center on Indy's East Side coming up on September 22nd with his new book, The Art He'd Sell for Love. See, there's the love connection.
Oh, I love it, so
nice?
To speak.
Yeah, and that's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30 again on the 22nd. In Lawrence, Dan Carpenter.
Fantastic. And don't forget, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra's season opens with Emmanuel Ax playing the Emperor Concerto this weekend. If you're hearing us on, either night, you can probably still score a ticket. Well, you can't get in the Wayback Machine for the Friday night show if you're hearing us on Saturday, but the Saturday concert is at 5:30. Make a note of that.
Very good. And of course, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Travis DiNicola spoke with Kyle Harrington, Director of Exhibitions at the Art Center, about their fall exhibition series.
You're the director of exhibitions.
Yes.
You've been in that role, what, about a year?
About a year now, yep. I've been at the Art Center for about 7 years total.
Mm-hmm.
Started out as a studio coordinator there, moving easels and chairs, and have been working my way up ever since. And
that's
been
awesome.
In the director of exhibitions role for about a year, which I'm very happy to do. So.
Well, congratulations on that. And you know, I know most exhibitions are planned fairly far in advance, so I'm guessing this is kind of like your first full season that
you
planned for?
Yeah. So I was very lucky. I worked under Patrick Flaherty, who's now the director of the Art Center.
Right.
At large, but he let me co-curate a lot of the shows with him. So a mm-hmm. lot of the shows that were up this past year under my first year of tenure as the director of exhibitions were ones that were kind of our brainchilds together.
Okay.
Now this year we're kind of running up to the ones that really were things that I was curating and things that I got a handpick, which is, of course, really exciting for me, and I'm very thrilled about it.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk about three that are coming up this fall in just a minute, but before we get into that, I do want to mention that right now at the Art Center, which is located in Broad Ripple, you've got your open house show featuring faculty work, right?
Yeah. So every August we have our annual open house, and that consists of several exhibitions that really highlight what we do at the Art Center, what's our day-to-day bread and butter.
Yeah.
So every year we have our faculty exhibition, which is upwards of 80-plus faculty members. That includes our outreach instructors as well. So there's a really wide variety of work in that show, and that's a really good way for people to come and look and kind of shop for what classes they want to take. A lot
sure.
of our students and patrons want to see the type of work that the instructors are doing, and that's a mm-hmm. really good way for us to be transparent and show the diversity that we have in mm-hmm. our own studios.
And if you really like someone's work, you may want to take a class from, maybe even take a class you didn't think that,
oh yeah,
like, oh, now I want to do glass blowing or drawing or painting or something.
A lot of our faculty members do cross medium work too, so it's really cool to see that interplay mm-hmm. Between mediums, and now we have a lot of classes where two different departments are working together, so that's a really cool thing to see the two different faculties' points of view and then get excited to take that class.
Awesome. And you guys are doing a lot more classes that are not necessarily like a full semester long, but sort of shorter.
Yeah. So we've got our anything from our one night only pop-up classes, mm-hmm. which are really cool. They're a really good intro if you're really nervous or not quite sure.
Yeah, not ready to commit yet.
Right. If you just want to dip your toe into the water a little bit, mm-hmm. then you can take one of those pop-up classes. But we've got 7-week classes, 4-week classes, 15-week classes. We've got weekend workshops. We've really got anything for anyone, which is really cool. And I love being in that wide net of possibilities from day to day, which is nice.
And then at Penrod this year, you guys are taking over the kids' arts tent.
Right, yeah. We're going to have an art activity going on there and really be able to highlight a lot of our activities that we have with kids. And that's always something that's really fun for us to cook up, and we love doing it.
Excellent. So let's talk about these three really interesting exhibits that are coming up. The first one is Plein Airs, not plein air, not like plein air painting, like outdoor painting, but Plein Airs. And the couple pieces that I've seen in some of the images from this kind of blew me away. It's a show that focuses on realism, but not your typical definition of realism.
Right. So this is something that I even talked with Patrick about a little bit back, and it's been something that's been boiling in my mind for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I went to art school, so my degree is actually in painting.
Okay.
And you know, growing up in the art world, whether it's from our parents or my boyfriend or just random people on the street, you always kind of get that, well, this doesn't really look like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why doesn't this look realistic? So that's something that's really been activating my mind for the last few years.
Okay.
So when I was able to start curating these shows, this is one that I was really excited to put together. And it's a combination of artists that I've been really interested in for a while
mm-hmm.
and artists that sent us cold proposals. We get about 200 to 300 proposals a year from artists that want to be in shows or just have their work considered to be exhibited. So this was a really fun one to put together because I got to put the puzzle pieces together of artists that I was really excited about and also artists I didn't know about and see how their work interplayed within each other and to see all these different representations of realism and be able to pull the trigger and put them into the show was really actually exciting.
Give me an example, and maybe the T-shirt is kind of one of the best ones for people to understand what we're talking about in terms of realism, but not your traditional idea.
So one of our artists, Chris Thorson, she's a sculptor, and the work that she does is she's casting these sort of everyday mundane objects out of either hydrocal or bronze. So a piece that's going to be in the show looks just like a folded T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
but what it is just a solid cast T-shirt, but it's painted photorealistically, so it looks real from far away. And you go up and you're really seeing the master brushstrokes of her painting it hyper-realistically. And that's something that I think is really exciting. And there's a really high...
The photograph just looks like, you know, it's just a T-shirt.
There's a really high reverence in the art world at large of people that have the skill to do things so photorealistically. Mm-hmm. But for me, the exciting part is taking this acquired skill and taking really this mastery of technique and merging that with contemporary ideas and context and ideals. And that's really what I think the linchpin in this show is. It's taking this idea, this traditional idea of realism and representationalism, twisting on its head a little bit and saying, hey, this looks like what it's supposed to do. But a lot of times there's little digs in contemporary culture, and mm-hmm. there's a lot more broader subjects there than this is just a still life, which is really cool.
Give me another example from that show, because I can't wait to see this show, just from what I've read and heard about it.
Right. So another artist that we have is Brent Owens, and he's a woodworker. One of the things that really kind of it puts a smile on my face is to see these pieces that he does, and they're basically reconstructions of neon signs, but they're mm-hmm. all made out of carved wood.
Okay.
So from far away, they look just like a neon sign, and he's using these bright fluorescent paints to recreate that fluorescent sign look,
yeah.
But you walk up to it and it's just carved wood with a extension cord hanging off of it.
That's so cool. So in many cases, it's a realistic piece done, but it's the material that's really different.
Yeah, there's a lot of different entry points to this show. So there's the artists that are kind of tricking the eye and doing something more of a take on a traditional trompe l'oeil technique.
Okay.
And making something realistic out of non-traditional materials. But then there's also people, someone like Joe Sinis, who is doing these hyper-realistic still life colored pencil drawings. And, you know, at first glance, they look like a very traditional still life. But then you look deeper into the imagery, and he's using a lot of reflections, so vases and glass and shiny objects. And you look deep into it, and you can see a reflection, for example, of Dolly Parton in the reflection. So while the meat of the piece is the representationalism, there's a lot of hidden context within these pieces. And I think that's something that rounds out this exhibit really, really well. There's a lot of viewpoints.
That sounds fair. And when does that one open?
That's September 25th is when that opens. That's our opening exhibition, opening reception for that show.
Okay.
And that is one of the three-part series of our fall exhibition series.
And the next one is Gathering, which is a glass show.
Right. That one's presented by the IGAA, which is the Indiana Glass Arts Alliance, and that's in partnership with the Indiana Glass Trail.
Okay.
That's a show that...
Very contemporary glass.
Right, right. It's really kind of state-of-the-art, who's mm-hmm. who in the glass world right now, which is really cool. And that's a show that they actually facilitated the jurying of. So while the Art Center is hosting that show, me as a curator didn't actually curate this show.
But
I've been blown away looking at these images. They're really, really solid pieces of work, and I think that they're going to complement the plein air show really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I'm excited about is when we're planning these exhibition series, you want to think about what shows are going to work in union together to present an overall series of shows.
Sure.
And to have this glass exhibition at the same time as the plein air show and our KP Singh show, which we're going to talk mm-hmm. about, it's really a great union of all of them together that are giving a very good interplay between the different shows. I think that's an important thing, too.
And the Art Center really has become known over the years for its glassblowing classes, this beautiful studio, great studio. And I know that it's one of your most popular classes that people take, whether it's a pop-up or a longer class and such. And so that's got to be also just great for the students to be able to see some really fantastic glass from all over the country. Right,
right. Yeah. And I think that the cool thing about having the show at the Art Center is they can see the process from beginning to end. They can mm-hmm. walk down to our glass blowing studio and see, you know, the infancy of one of these glass pieces. They can see the metal going into the kiln and turning the molten glass and things like that. But then they can walk down the hallway and see this finished, polished, presented piece. So it's really just seeing the entire lifespan of the process of glass blowing. And really, that's the case with a lot of our shows in general, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's something as a curator that I want to think about is how can I... you know, how can I supplement the work going on in our classrooms, but also present a really dynamic and engaging show to the public at large? So it's a lot of audiences to serve, and it's a really It can be a brain teaser at times to curate that way, but it's a really exciting puzzle for me to figure out. And I really want to be able to present such a wide variety of work to all of these different audiences that we
have. Very cool. And I think especially the process of glass, I mean, the process of painting or drawing or ceramics are things that most of us kind of inherently comprehend. Mm-hmm. But glass is something that for many people is still this sort of big mystery. Like, how does it go from, you know, that pile of glass into this incredible sculpted object?
You know?
And so that'll be a very cool show to see.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different types of glasswork in that show too. Like, as I said, I just got the images last week, and so to be able to see, there's cast glass, there's blown glass, there's fused glass, there's all these different types of work, and I think that it's really important to show that scope in the art world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very proud to host this exhibition and work alongside the IGAA with all of them and show everybody.
And it's the Indiana Glass Alliance.
Right, the Indiana Glass Arts Alliance.
So, and then the third show, you mentioned K.P. Singh.
Yes.
And K.P. is just, anyone who knows him knows he's just one of the greatest guys ever. Just a really kind, sweet gentleman, an amazing illustrator. His architectural illustrations have been for sale at the Broad Ripple Art Fair since the very beginning, right?
He's done every Broad Ripple Art Fair.
Every single one. Yeah, he's such a cool guy. You know,
he's always so great to talk to. And every time we go by his booth at the Broad Ripple Art Fair, he greets us with a big hug.
Yep.
He's a really great guy. He's got such interesting stories. And I think that historical context of his work is very interesting. And he has this love affair with architecture and historical buildings and things like that. And through his work, I think he's making a really important statement about preserving the historical importance of buildings, not just in Indianapolis, but in the Midwest in general and throughout the country and internationally, too.
Very cool. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for coming to Art of the Matter today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan. You're doing such great things for our city. So
I appreciate that.
Always happy to help you out and talk to you.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to seeing you up at the Art Center in Broad Ripple very soon.
Yes, thank you so much.
Travis DiNicola with Kyle Harrington, Director of Exhibitions at the Indianapolis Art Center. For more information about their classes and the fall exhibition series, visit IndplusArtCenter.org. That's IndplusArtCenter.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out what the Indie Folk Series is presenting this fall.
I'll get a preview of the upcoming Shining Light Film Festival.
And I'll check out this year's Lotus Festival, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.